Hello and welcome to another edition of the CBB Super Show. It is the Sunday, the last Sunday, season finale Sunday. I am your host, Walter Waddell, a.k.a. Dub Deuces. I'm joined, as always, by my partner in crime and co-host, Pete Cole. We'll be breaking down this large Sunday slate of games. We have some low to mid-majors on this DK slate, which is fantastic. We have a night slate, so we've got two different slates on a Sunday. We've also got day basketball happening throughout the week. Conference tournaments are in full swing. ACC conference tournament, Big 12, all the big guys are starting on Tuesday, Wednesday. Lots of fun stuff happening. Pete, are you excited as I am for March Madness? We're basically 1 week away from Selection Sunday at this point already.
Yeah, this is the best time of year. It's a good slate. I didn't even realize you just said that there's a 7 p.m. slate. So this is right in your wheelhouse too, all these little mid-majors. And I'll be listening to you on some of this too, because you're the expert on some of these teams, man. These Campbells it's a good slate. It's nice to see eight games. I wish they would have had a little bit better contest, but that's kind of out of our realm. It is what it is, and we do the best we can, spend some money.
Yeah, definitely. Like my grind's kind of been the single entry stuff, anyway. So I always play the 6 and the 12, which kind of the same size every day, and then I just pound head to heads. And I've been talking to people at length, you know, we have these injuries, yesterday we had the Cuisinart, and it hurt a lot of people in the industry. Pretty much everyone that provides content for CBB was on Cuisinart. He was over 40-50%. Late scratch, nobody in the industry, you know, no beat writers, nobody put it out prior to lock. We all got burned. You know, obviously your GPP, you know, you're dead in GPPs from the jump with a zero, basically. But I still won back a good amount of money because of all the head-to-heads I played. And a lot of guys had Cuisinart in their head-to-head, so it canceled out. And I still almost pushed 200 with a zero, which hurts even worse. So keep telling everybody to, you know, really, especially this time of year with more and more people hitting the NBA, you know, with NBA on a break or whatever, hitting that head-to-head lobby. And you know, not only just looking for people to take from, because that's what everybody tries to do, but posting. You know, I've had a lot of success just posting a couple at a time. And the secret is, I'll let you guys know, is you don't post like 5 to 10 at a time, because that might, you know, intimidate people and scare them off, and you'll get a bunch of regulars in your games. But posting 2, 3, 4 at a time at the different dollar levels, because it's less intimidating if you're not posting a whole bunch. And you'll get a nice variety of people that you have never even heard of or seen in contests before taking your head-to-head. So you also can limit how many each person takes. You can limit to one per level in your head-to-head settings. A lot of people don't know that also. You know, you get scooped by a person, and it's maddening. They took all my $3 and $4 or $5, whatever. Make sure you go in your settings and you change that so that they can only take, you know, one at your 1, 3, 5, 10, whatever it is that you post. But posting is very underrated. You get a good variety of opponents, and you win back a lot of money even if you have a, you know, a big mistake in your lineup. Let's dive right in here, though. We have the nice big slate. Our first game on it is Memphis versus Houston. This should be a very ugly game. Two very good defensive teams. Ken Palm has it 72-61 in favor of Houston. Houston's just, you know, they're a bulldozer right now. They're just crushing all competition. They are 312th in tempo ranking, so very slow. Nice thing about Memphis is they're 35th in tempo ranking, so it'll be a nice boost for Houston. The total is only 133, though. That is the lowest on the slate to be expected. You know, they're basically a step up above Virginia in terms of pace. And it's +9.5 for Memphis, so they're not expected to really compete here. I personally won't be targeting any Memphis guys. I've been having a lot of success targeting DeAndre Williams recently. He's been posting 30s, you know, pretty frequently. Now he's got a tough opponent like Houston. His price is up over 8.2. It's just not a really good spot. I think he's fine for GPP still, but it's a really tough ask. I will say, before we move on any further, there's like 15 playable options under the 5K range right now. So salary isn't actually going to matter that much. You can pay up for a guy like Williams at 8.2 if you really are hell-bent on it, even though it's a bit of an overpay, because you have this plethora of cheap guys at your disposal. And there's really nobody to pay up for. You know, we got Garza up there at 10K always. Vaudrin, who's a stud from Winthrop, he's up over 9.4. There's just a lot of guys up there that aren't really the great plays, and there's not a lot of great quality pay up. So you can pay up for whoever you want on the slate, even if it's an overpay, just because there's so many cheap guys. Also on Memphis side, the only other guy maybe I'd look at is Musa Cisse at 4.8. Even though Houston's been a shutdown unit on defense, they have gotten beaten up a little bit by physical front court players, something that Cisse really is. He's under 5K now. He does have a 21% usage rate, which is okay. But his block rate's over 11%, which is top 20 in the country. offensive rebounding rate over 13.8%, which is top 35 in the country, and a defensive rebounding rate of 24.6%, which is top 60. So if anyone's going to do any damage to Houston here, it would be Cisse, but he does get called for 5 fouls per 40. So that'll be a moot point, all those great efficiency rankings that he has, if he picks up two early fouls, which there's a very good chance he will. We've had a lot of success with Quentin Grimes recently. His price is up to 8.9 now. That kind of hurts me. I'm not sure I can pay that. Even Giroux at 7.9 feels like it's a bit too high, but he is the most cash playable option. Even though Memphis, you know, their defense has been good, Giroux's just a five-category contributor that is going to have a high floor of 20, 25 fantasy points any given day just because of, you know, his ability to stack up statistics. Tremont Mark, 4.8 is an okay value. And then Justin Gorham's back down to 6.1, which Gorham had been a really nice option. They've been pulling away from him a little bit because of the fact that Fabian White's back. So it's not a cash play by any means. But he does have a really solid rebounding ranks. His offensive rebounding efficiency ranking is 17, which is fourth best in the country. He has the highest offensive rating on the team by a mile. He's actually top 20 in the country in offensive rating. And then he has a 38% combined rebounding rate, which is top, 150 in the country. So there's a lot to like about Gorham, but his minutes are kind of spotty here recently. So not a game to be targeting heavily, but if you're running a bunch of lineups and you want to get exposure, there will be guys that come out of this game. You know, it's not like there are going to be no points scored that are going to make value. It's just extremely risky to target a game like this when you have some faster-paced games or, I guess, sexier options on the slate. So what's your move here?
Yeah, I probably won't use anybody from this game. You got two teams, I think, they're just going to beat the shit out of each other. They're actually two good rebounding teams, too, huh? You know what? The one name, you mentioned him at the end, who kind of interests me, of course, if you're running a few lineups, is Fabian White. Because if he played 28, 30 minutes, he'd have some numbers because he's only playing 18 minutes, yet he's getting his usages in the last, four or five games up like over 25%. Putting up he's putting up like five times his value. But that's just one of the names that interests me. And Cisse, I could see Cisse have a decent game down low, but that is it. But a guy like Williams, somebody may come out of here. Somebody may come out of here having a big game. Somebody's got to score. I mean, there's going to be a few points scored. It's a little over under, but no, this isn't like there's no cash game plays out of this game.
Yeah. All right. So next game here is Campbell versus Winthrop. An exciting one. This is for the Big South Championship here. KenPom has a 78-67 in favor of Winthrop. They're 12th in Temple rank, a very fast team. Hope they're going to win because we definitely want, you know, them in the tournament. Some Chandler Vodran action, who's a stud. Campbell's 341 Temple ranking, very slow. The total on this game is 142.5. So that is the second highest on the slate. So there's definitely going to be some points here. And then Winthrop's 11.5-point favorite. So they think it's going to be, you know, a relatively comfortable game for them. Pricing-wise, you know, Chandler Vodran, he's 9-4. I was hoping he would be like 7-5 or even 8K because he's a triple-double threat anytime he steps on the floor. He's been with the team two or three years now. He's a really exciting player. He's a freak, man. You look at him and you won't think that he would come out there and he's kind of like a Ryan Daly. You know, he has that look about him where it's like, okay, this guy's okay. Yeah. Shows up to the YMCA or whatever. But he's out there dropping, you know, 10 dimes, dunking on people, hitting threes. A total stud. So he's got a good size too, 6'7", 210 pounds. Plays 80% of the minutes at his position, was top 300. Has a true shooting percentage in the upper 50s, 23.4% defensive rebounding rate, which is top 90 in the country. His assist rate is 38.8%, which is top 11. That's where you see he has that triple-double upside there. Draws 5.5 fouls per 40. Doesn't get called for a lot of fouls, just 2.5 fouls per 40. He's a 38% three-point shooter on 47 attempts. Doesn't take a ton, but when he does, he's hitting them. Just a whole lot to like there. You'll see that his upside maybe isn't quite there for a guy that's at 9-4. You know, you'd like to see some 50s, but he has splashed. I mean, that game against High Point there on the first, he had 10 points, 12 rebounds, 10 assists, followed that up with a 16-8-9 performance, and he's flirted with a triple-double several times this year. So this is one of those instances where I think he'll be low-owned because the price tag does seem egregious, but with all the salary options that we have, you could pay up for him, and it's a very safe floor. if he gets 4X, I mean, that's totally fine for him to hit 37, 38 fantasy points. It's not going to break the slate, but I think raw points may come in handy here, as you've seen the last couple of days. Yesterday, the main slate we thought was going to take a 400, ended up 240, was winning GPPs, 250 at most. So sometimes I think we worry too much about getting 5 and 6X, where we just need to take some, you know, relatively safe points and get a highest floor as possible, especially in GPPs lately. So I think Vondran's fine. And if he's going to be lower owned, I would definitely look there. I'm very interested in the Big South version of Matthew Mayer. You guys remember the other day, Matthew Mayer, we got a monster game from him at semi-low ownership because of his rates. Adonis Arms comes off the bench, similar to Mayer, for Winthrop. He's a guy that has a usage rate of 32.2%, which is top 15 in the country, a 31.3% shot rate, which is top 50. His defensive rebounding rate's just under 25%. That's top 60, and he has an assist rate of 19.8%. He's also drawing 7.2 fouls per 40, which is eighth best rate in the country, and has a 3% steal rate. So this guy comes into the game and he's totally dominating usage. He has a guard. He has a guy like Vondran who runs point at 6'7" quite a bit actually, and is facilitating the offense. He finds Arms for easy shots. Arms is a 34% 3-point shooter, so he can step out and hit shots as well. He's 4'9", so he's a little higher than you'd like for a guy that's really only playing, you know, roughly 18 minutes on average. But he is averaging almost 11 points, 5 rebounds, a steal, a couple assists per game. He can legit put up, you know, 5X in this scenario here, especially if he starts going closer to the 20-minute mark. There's risk. He's coming off the bench. But I think that his rates are good enough, much like Mayer, that if you're going to get that 20 minutes from him, he should easily make value. Prefer him to be in that lower four range, obviously, for a slam dunk play, but I still think he can easily make value because this Winthrop team, the reason why they don't project all that well is they're rather deep. They're kind of a miniature version of FSU in that they'll go 9, 10, 11 deep. And even Vondran will only play, you know, 30 minutes at most sometimes, especially if the game's out of hand. They blow a lot of teams out, so they just end up playing their bench a lot. So maybe that helps Arms in the end, but that is the main issue. I mean, even a guy like DJ Burns, who a lot of people are high on, you know, he's only playing roughly 15 to 16 minutes. He's only 4'2". He would be a slam dunk play if you think that he would get more. He has a usage rate over 30 or 26%, a shot rate over 33%, but his minutes just aren't there. So there's a lot to like on this Winthrop dream. It's just minutes aren't the best. As far as Campbell goes, I don't have a ton of interest in Campbell. Their prices are kind of where they should be. Cedric Henderson is their best player in terms of usage rate 25%. Shot rate 27.3%, has a steal rate over 2%, a block rate of almost 4%, draws almost 5,000 per 40. But he's 6'9". You know, it's certainly a pace boost for Campbell, but I just don't think they're going to be able to compete too well here. Henderson's kind of, you know, high is around 35, I think, on any given day. He's typically going to be in the mid-20s. But 6'9", we're not really getting a whole lot of bang for our buck. I did say that, you know, paying for raw points is going to be important, but I think we can go up from 6'9", even to a guy like Jaden Springer for, you know, 800 more. And there's a couple other options we're going to talk about that are in that 6K range too. So I'm not really that high on Campbell, but Winthrop I definitely want exposure to. So what do you know about the Big South, brother?
Well, if a guy like Springer wasn't hanging right around that Cedric Henderson range, I would probably like Henderson. If you look at his numbers, they've been decent. Besides, like, the last two games, and he had a little bit of dip. But the thing I like about Henderson is it seems like the dude never misses. And that's the only good thing I see about Campbell is the whole team is a good shooting team. I think they're eighth nationally, and the team shoots, like, 50%. So, but, yeah, you have to go with a guy like Springer, I guess, if you can sit there and pay 7K. Vondran may – and I don't think Vondran's going to get high ownership, right?
Nope. Not at all. Marty, already poking around the industry and people are saying, oh, no, I wanted to use them. Everybody says the same thing. I wanted to use them, but the price is too high. So you know what that means.
You're going to have the money. In this conference tournament right now, he's averaging a triple-double. 13 yeah. points, 10 rebounds, and 9.5 assists. I actually just popped up on my screen. He's the only player in the country to register three triple-doubles this year. So that's DFS goodness right there. You got a guy with three triple-doubles. So. Yeah, so I guess to me it's gonna be battling again, playing Garza or Vondran as your main play. Garza's gonna get all the love, but Vondran may be the sneaky play. I gotta look at that a little bit more. That's a good call. And man, if Arms, if you look at Arms's logs, if he plays 20 minutes, he's getting you 5 or 6K easy. But then when he plays 14 minutes, so last game was 14 minutes. Game four at 21, 14, 15, and he's at that usage is crazy. So I mean, that's a good call. Gotta see what else we have here for value. But Vaudrin's the main name comes out of here. Definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. As we break down the slate, you're gonna be like, oh my god, we have another sub five K guy. There's so many. The slate will obviously be won based off the value, not pay ups today. So another game with lots here is the Florida versus Tennessee game. Rematch, you know, Tennessee went into the last time they played Florida without Springer. They got their clocks completely clean. This Florida team has been frustrating all season. Coach Mike White is, you know, just does puzzling things with his rotation, especially with Castleton and Omar Payne and Scotty Lewis. Like I said, they did blow out Tennessee 75-49 last time. That was without Springer, though, and they're a totally different team with him. I will save the Florida side for you. So I'm doing a lot of talking here, and I'm sure people want to hear what you have to say. Tennessee, my man Jaden Springer, he's only 7'7". I think that's still a viable price for him. He's playing roughly 30 minutes. The Auburn game, I was really pissed at myself because that was, I think it was a weekend slate. I kind of gave my 2v2, and it was him, and then there was a couple other guys, and I ended up going the other side because I was worried that maybe Springer, you know, he wasn't going to hit that 40 mark, maybe more like the low 30s, and of course he put up 41. Against a really easy opponent like Auburn. So I was really upset. So Florida's another fantasy-friendly defense. I don't want to get into the whole, oh, Springer's almost 8K. I can't pay that. I guess that's why I really wanted to establish early on in the show that you can pay for whoever you want to. I don't want you to have that mentality that this guy's priced out just because there is so many cheapies. You're going to play three or four guys that are under 5'5 today in your main lineup, and it's actually a great optimal build for once. There's a lot of less risk in it than there normally is because there's so many solid options. So you can play Springer and feel pretty good about it. I think the guy that comes out of Tennessee that'll be higher owned is maybe Keon Johnson just because he projects well for us and some other places around at 5'5". He's more of a GPP guy for me, though, because he's all over the place. You know, he'll go up to 30, but he'll be down at 9. He turns the ball over a lot. He does have foul trouble at times. So for me, he's just really not a cash game play. And I know the price is attractive at 5'5", and he's got good rates. But I just, there's a lot more risk there. And I think people realize he does have a 27% usage rate, 24.5% shot rate compared to Springer, who's right around 24% shot rate, 26% usage rate. So they're very similar there. I'd rather just pay up for Springer because I think it's a lot safer, even though Keon could very well, you know, beat him or match him in total points. But it just, I feel like it's a little safer to go for Jaden here. I'm not on Pons. I'm not on, you know, Fulkerson, James. They all could do well. Their prices are cheap, but there's just way too much volatility there. I think this would be the first time really since last year that I would recommend going to Santiago Vescovi. I'm a big superstitious believer, and when a guy slips under 4K, that they're playable. He's 3'8". You know, he's still going to play roughly 28 to 30 minutes. You know, he's got a bit to fill it up. You know, rebounds, assists, steals, points. You know, he's a 4-cat. Contributor, not 5. So I think that 3.8 is a price you can pay here. There's another guy 3.8 that we'll talk about in the Wisconsin game that, you know, maybe we like a little more, but there's really, you know, I think that's just because we see him do better, but Vescovi has to be in your player pool at 3.8. You know, he's averaging right around 20 fantasy points, which would completely shatter his price tag today. You know, if you want a mini vol stack, this is, you know, Vescovi and Springer and Johnson are definitely got to be in your scopes. And I think they beat Florida today. You know, it's a must-win game for them pretty much. They're starting to slip to that 7, 8, 9 line, which isn't good. They don't want to be in that line where they have to face a one seed in the second round if they win their first round matchup. And they're a prime team to, you know, potentially get upset in the first round with the way they're playing, because Springer's really the only guy that can go get a damn bucket for them. What do you think about this game? I left Florida all for you. I like Florida, but I wanted to hear what your take was.
Yeah. Well, okay. Yeah, I guess just to get for Tennessee, I guess Vescovi is play at 3.8. Anybody that is in play at 3.8 that plays. Today's senior day, I see, too, for Tennessee.
Yeah.
Noah Locke at 4.1. First time I think I've even mentioned his name is in play all year. But, look, he actually had a good game the last time in the last game these two teams played. I don't take a lot of stock in that, but when you're a shooter like Locke, who doesn't have much peripherals, he was, well, 5 for 13, he had like 3 rebounds. So I think I may be saying locks in play. And Colin, mm-hmm. I keep saying I'm going to go away from Colin Castleton, and he keeps sucking me back in. It was like I'm talking about the Godfather here, but he's so good. I mean, I just think he's so good at that size. He's averaging like 13 points a game, and just, I say it, feel like every day with no Keontae, he's going to come through. He's going to be the, you know, he's definitely going to be the best post player on the court today. There's no doubt, and he's overdue for another big game. And as long as he stays on the damn floor and gets the last game was 24 minutes, game before that he had 34 minutes, and he almost put up 30 DK. He's due for a 30 DK point game. But at 6'4", we should be expecting that anyways. I mean, we shouldn't be contemplating is he going to have one. Last game he only put up like 17, I think it was. So, but Castleton's got to be in play here. And you know who's kind of slipping on the radar is Trey, is my man. I mean, 8'7", he's not getting much. The projections aren't there. He's not getting much love. And this is the game where Trey comes through. He's so gifted offensively. The problem is he plays so damn loose. He's going to commit some turnovers. But he's got 55 turnovers this year. That's a lot. But Trey is my man. So to me, Trey's a sneak play of this whole thing. Trey could come in here and light him up, and he's going to be so low owned today because nobody's even going to be looking at him with some other prices up there. So I'm looking at Trey. I may even end up using Trey in cash in Castleton. And Noah Lock, you know, if he makes some GDPs, Lock could light it up. But I think this is definitely – I need to talk about Anthony DeRuji also. What's your thoughts on DeRuji, man? I can't get DeRuji right because he's back to playing over 30 minutes the last couple of games.
Yeah. He's back, you know, starting, playing the big minutes. The price has climbed again now because he's done well. You know, three of his last four over 18. So he's pretty – I mean, I guess who he is a 20 fantasy point guy. As an attack, he would be capable of putting up 35 to 40. Obviously, SEC competition is a lot tougher than, you know, CUSA. But, you know, I just expected more of him. And I think it might have more to do with the coaching as opposed to his actual ability. What did we see last year from Kerry Blackshear? I mean, I had a future on Florida. I thought they were a guaranteed Final Four team. Yep. He didn't play fast with his personality, made him slow down. Blackshear had a kind of a down year from what we expected. So I think it has more to do with how bad of a coach Mike White is. If there's Florida fans listening, I'm sorry, but I'm pretty certain that they feel the same way. So I think if DeRuji was on another team, he would be putting up monster numbers. I just think he's being held back a little bit. So he's a good player, yes. Shitty coached.
And I'm looking at Castleton DeRuji side by side. There's not that much of a difference beside almost $2,000.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, I just – do you think you want pieces out of this game from Florida? But there really isn't. If I'm going to use a piece, it's probably going to be Trey. All right. The more I'm looking at it, I would probably play DeRuji over Castleton right now because Castleton's only getting a few more fantasy points a game than DeRuji, and you're going to get that big discount. Like I said, there's so much other value coming out today, so I'm not even sure if you need any of this.
Yeah, and White, Coach White's playing Castleton less. You know, he's Omar Payne and Castleton have been – their minutes have kind of gone down as DeRozier's has gone up. They're playing Osifo and some of these other guys. You know, they're bench players, and it doesn't make any sense. Mann's really the only safe guy. Actually, Appleby's pretty safe too. I've been using him recently, but they popped him up to 6'5 now, which – you know, he was 5'4 last night, which is perfect. He was right around 20%. I used him. He got the 25. You know, he's over 4X at that tag. He's typically going to be over 20 fantasy points, but they made him so highly priced now. He is one of the guys where I know I just said that price doesn't matter on this slate. He is one of the few that, you know, while he's a good play, I think 6'5 is a little high for his production.
Definitely.
He did get benched for a time last game. He had 5 turnovers in the first half. So he was benched to start the second half, but then he came in, didn't commit any more, and kind of settled in. But you see he's putting up like, double digit, you know, 12.55, 11.55, 13.52. Like, he's sprinkling each category and playing well. So Mann and Appleby are probably the safest, and their minutes seem to be the safest too. Whereas, you know, Castleton has been starting, then he's coming off the bench. But even if he does come off the bench or starts, they're playing him that mid-20s minutes, and that's just, even at 6'4", it's not enough. If he's going to start slipping in the 5K range, then we're going to be talking about, yeah, we're all in again. But it's his minutes still aren't enough. And I think he may become popular because projections say so. They said so last slate. They said the slate before. And people keep rolling him out there that are pot committed. And I get that because I'm pot committed on guys all the time. But I'll probably stay away from him. I don't think I feel very good about using him right now.
Usage has gone up the last few games, but that's a big pop, man. From $1,100. Nope. If he was 5'4", I would say yeah, he's a lock. I'll probably play him in cash. Because if you look at his rates the last two or three games, but no, stay away. I don't think if I'm not playing Trey, I'm probably not playing anybody from this Florida team today.
Yeah.
In my first Florida top of lineups. They're too stretched out. They're become Florida State.
They're a team. Yeah, exactly. They're a team that I don't feel great about. I keep on, dabbling because somebody's out or they have a different starting lineup or the matchup's good. And then they let us down. I was a little upset with myself because the last slate we had talked about, the Florida was on it. And Noah Locke was 3-9. And I said, I never recommend Locke. I think he's a play here. Of course, he came out, shooting lights out. He had like 15 at halftime. And then the second half, he did his normal Noah Locke disappearance. So 4-1, he's definitely in play. But I think, 4-6, I'd probably play DeRuji. And then even Scotty Lewis. I mean, look at what's happened to Scotty Lewis. He's only 3-9, but you can't even use him in cash because his minutes are way down. Coach White's really demoralized him to the point that when he's out there, he's turning it over. He's fouling. He's scared to shoot. I mean, you look at it when Scotty shoots, he's terrified to shoot. I mean, there needs to be a serious come to Jesus chat from the AD to the basketball department because he's ruining players. He is absolutely ruining players. And Scotty Lewis, he came back for a second year to improve his NBA stock, and all he did was completely destroy his NBA stock. So I wouldn't be surprised to see Scotty transfer at the end of the year, or at coaching change, because this team should not be as bad as they are. And I know people are going to look at him and be like, "Well, wait a second, they're 13-7, they're in the mix, and they should be better. They should be a top end SEC team. This nucleus should only have probably like 3 or 4 losses and be in the top of the top 25, a top 10 team, in my opinion. I know they lost Key Johnson, that's a big loss, but they still have pieces that should do well, just haven't. So
that offense too. I mean, you would think that offense would be much better. I mean, that offense is dangerous, but. It's no, like I said, it's no work of art, and they turn the ball over like crazy. Look at Lewis earlier in the season. He was putting up mid-30s on the regular against games like Florida State and Vanderbilt, and now the poor guy's turned into, beside the Auburn game, he's done nothing. But it seems like every time they're on the slate, right before a lock, we're all rushing around because there's some crazy Mike White move or somebody starting or somebody sitting. And anytime you start messing with Florida at the buzzer right before a lock, it doesn't work out.
It's a disaster. Yep, it is, and it happens every slate. You're right. They'll start somebody. Like today, he'll probably start Omar Payne today, and then we'll all be like, oh, shoot, do we got to play Payne? So I want to say it right now. This is the Florida support group. If you guys are in our Discord and you're a member, let's all help each other. If Florida has something late happening and we start talking, you hear me or Pete say, oh, we got to get this person in, just remind us that we said on the podcast we're not going to go to Florida late and ruin our lineups, okay? We'll need a reminder because they're like a drug, man. You don't want to do it, but you can't help it. I need that hit of Florida.
Trayman's the only one I could say. If you say you're playing him, good move. He's in play. That's it. Seriously. Yeah,
definitely. Otherwise, it's the ball side. Springer, Viscovi, Johnson, who I think we'll see be popular, but he's a GPP guy for me. I can't get down with Keon Johnson. I like him, but he's just a little too high variant.
He's gonna be popular.
Next game, yeah, definitely. Next game here, Wisconsin versus Iowa. You had mentioned possibly paying for Garza. That's always the question on these Iowa slates. Ken Pom has it 77-70 in favor of Iowa. They're 98 tempo ranking. Wisconsin 325th. Now, these two teams just played recently. What was it? It's on mid-February. It was a 77-62 victory for Iowa on the road. An impressive win. Garza had a big game. You wouldn't expect him against a slower team like Wisconsin, especially at the Kohl Center, and a good defense to put up what he did. I've been fading. I'm a proponent of fading Garza. You typically are smarter than me and use him because he has the high floor. But fading him has really not hurt me other than maybe 2 or 3 slates all season long. And this was one of them. He put up 30 points, 8 rebounds, 2 assists, and a block. He had 4 triples. He had it cooking there. So it was one of his, bigger games. And I think it was one where he was priced at like, 9-1 or 8. Like his price had come down, I think I'm pretty certain of that. I got a question. It's a home game. They've got to, show out. Oh, he's 9-5. Okay. So I guess he wasn't super cheap. And just conventional wisdom says he shouldn't do good against an opponent like the Badgers, but I don't know, man. He did last time. So a 50 burger from Garza here would be an auto cash, min cash for whoever has him. He's going to be popular. He typically is. The thing, here's my question, and maybe I'm just the idiot, and a lot of people, I've been called worse, so I'll call myself an idiot, but Garza every slate is super chalk at this price. Moses Wright, who has been tearing things up, was 10% at the same price last slate, and of course he busted, so everybody who faded him felt like they were the genius in the room against Wake fucking Forest. I just didn't get that, man. I don't understand why Moses is not chalk and Garza is, when Moses is putting up slate-breaking scores at a more frequent pace than Garza. I guess maybe because Garza gets the, you know, player of the year talk or whatever. So that was something that I felt like was edge. Getting Moses at 10% last slate was a big time edge. Obviously it didn't work out. But that's a winning play typically. So you can just, you know Garza's gonna be chalk. I think I'll probably fade again because I always fade. It's paid me off a lot more than it hasn't. There's a lot of in play in this game. Iowa has become a deep rotation team. Without Jack Nunge, Garza's minutes have been a little more secure. With Nunge around, he was losing them. But they, you know, they just had a blowout against Nebraska last game. They're playing 10, 11 guys. They're getting some of their littler used bench guys' minutes because they're going to need depth in the tourney run. What are you doing with Garza, man? Because typically I know you play him and you have success with him. You know, at the same time, when I say I'm fading him and it's profitable, you're profitable using him because he's still putting up 35. And in your cash games, you know, that's good enough for you to move on. Maybe not so much in GPPs, but you're making money off of using him where I'm making money off of not using him. It's kind of one of those, you know, weird, enigmatic type of plays. But what are you doing with him today?
Well, the biggest thing, every slate, I don't want to use him. But then I feel like I have to because when I get thinking that 75-80% of the slate is going to use him and he goes off in a 50 burger, then I feel like I'm screwed. That's more of my like MLB DFS strategy talk. You know what I mean? I'm more of a cash player,
yeah,
and a chalk player. And you can't afford to. This has happened the other night. I thought I had a kick-ass lineup and I didn't have who was it for Miami, and he was 75% owned and pretty much tore my lineup down Friday night. Was it McGusty? Whoever it was, but yeah, it was McGusty. And that's always my fear when you're playing a lot of cash is you have a 75% owned player that goes off, and then you're playing from behind the rest of the day. So, and I think a lot of it is just the Garza name. People are going to see Garza or Bodrin, and normal DFS players going to go to Garza just because they know him. He's the big player of the year, when Bodrin is just as good of a play. And also, we've seen what he did to him last time. I was just looking at some notes from the last game and all that. And Garza does worry Wisconsin. And too much in that first game, Garza was screening for his teammates, and he was left wide open and outside the screen and taking advantage. And then they're leaving him open to hit. Yeah, he hit 4 3-pointers. You can't let Garza hit 4 3-pointers on you. And Wisconsin's got to beat him up. The only way they're going to get around him today is beating him up and tiring him out on their end. So I'm probably getting up playing him again. Like, I'm always on a borderline. I would rather probably play Bodrin. But I think if you're a cash game player, what's Bodrin? 9-4, right?
Yeah.
It's a nice leverage spot, though, Bodrin. But probably in cash, I would say you probably have to go to the Garza. And Kesey has that big game. You're making two, and Vaudrin is the perfect leverage, you know, pivot play for GPP to me. If you're playing single entries, Garza is the only play from Iowa I even see close today. I'm not messing with Keegan Murray again. I'm not messing with CJ. Keegan probably is the only other name that comes out of there that is possibly in play. I think, to me, it's all this Wisconsin value. And what are you going to do with it? And I have no idea. I was curious to see what you think on Jonathan Davis and Aline Ford and all these guys. I think you want to play a couple of these guys, right?
Yeah, so real quick on your point on Keegan, his price is over 5K now, so I kind of drop off of him. Even in the blowout last game against Nebraska, he played 18 minutes and really thought that he was going to play more. He made value at 20 fantasy points, but it was a disappointment because I thought he'd play, you know, upper 20s and get him ready for the tournament. And they just didn't do that. Yeah, Wieskamp's price back up. So yeah, I'm in agreement with you. If I'm using anyone in Iowa, it's probably Garza. One thing I'll say, the Garza versus Vaudrin conversation, Garza has a higher upside. By far, you know, he's going to hit 50 where Fodren's going to be sitting in that 30 to 40 range consistently. Garza's 10K though, and you know, he needs 50 to really get your bang for your buck. Even a 40 spot from Garza today, I think you'll feel a little disappointed about in your cash games. That's perfect though. And like you said, you play a lot of cash. I don't play as many double ups lately. I'm just kind of hitting head to heads a lot, and single entry GPPs and stuff. So I tend to fade them. But I think the 40 from Garza, while it won't be great in GPPs, will help you at least, you know, cash your DU. So that's why you're successful rostering him. I've been successful in my type of contest not rostering him. He's a really weird player, but he's good. And rostering him is definitely going to get you a high floor at the very least.
Look at Garza's logs, though. He hasn't hit 50 since over a month, February 2nd. And he's only hit 40, one, two, like three or four times in the last month. He's seen that he's been in the 30s just as many times as he's been in the 40s. So he's not the lock like he was back in January and late December, by far. Yeah. It's just his ownership. And he's always capable of it.
Yeah, and he's a really good team player. You know, he's fine with his teammates going off. I will say there's danger in this game being, you know, his final home game. I don't think he'll come back. I know it's a free year, but he'll probably just dip.
Good point.
You know, so maybe he wants to show out, you know, one final time for the home crowd.
Yep.
You know,
that's
so there is risk there in fading him. If you're a narrative believer, I know I am more so than you, but even you got to say a last home game for a guy, he's going to get up for it. As far as the Wisconsin value, I'm not really a lean Ford guy. He's cheap enough at 4-1 to where, you know, and it's a great matchup. Obviously, Iowa guys typically, they show out against Iowa. It's a fast-paced team. They don't play a lot of defense. So I would see, you know, a lean Ford hitting around 20 here, you know, which is solid 5X. He's going to be right around 16 to 20, no more, probably no less. So he's definitely fine. He's in play if you need that value. And he's another guy under 5K you can play. John Davis at 3-7 really jumps out to me. He is way more active than Ford. He's a little more high variant, of course. But, you know, his last time out against Iowa, he did play 34 minutes. He had 18.5 fantasy points, which would kick ass at 3-7. You know, it's just 400 cheaper than Ford. Doesn't start, but he's still roughly playing that, you know, 25 to 30 minutes. Now, he only played 16 against Purdue. He did have early foul trouble there that kept him out of the first half a lot. And he didn't really get into the rhythm of the game. You know, when you sit out a lot of the first half, you know what happens. It takes you out of your element. You just, you know, can't get back into it. If he's, you know, a normal game for him is 28 to 35 minutes. He's playing a lot. Guard trusts him. 3-7 is just way too cheap. So I definitely think he's in play. I would probably even use him more confidently over Vescovi, but my research tells me Vescovi over Davis just because, you know, he's a starter, he's playing more minutes, and you know, he's more offensively involved, but he's not as involved in other categories like John Davis is. So I would still play Davis over Ford. I'm not a big Tyler Wahl guy since he's been in and out of the lineup. Brad Davison is finally over 5K to where I don't have to worry about fading him. He's had, what, four games over at 20 or more fantasy points recently. He's been shooting the ball well. He's still technically in play at 5-3, but we know from using Davison throughout the season, he's really a guy that you can't count on. Now, Potter started going up top here. Micah Potter, he started his ham run, if you will, against Iowa in mid-February, where he got 30 minutes, scored 42, then he followed that up with 40, 31, and then he had foul trouble against Purdue, where he only played 15 minutes, but he still had 20 fantasy points. So Potter's back to going nuts. At 6-5 on the road, I think he could have another nice game. One thing about Iowa, even with Luka Garza, they get beat up on defense, and especially the big men. Big men have done well. Pete Nance kind of owned on Iowa, and I'm a big Pete Nance guy. We're going to talk about him in a little bit.
Yep.
So I think Potter could do some serious damage. Am I confident enough to use him in a main lineup situation? Probably not, because guards with his minutes could always go sideways. But it at least seems right now guards doing the right thing and getting him minutes. Now, he couldn't last game against Purdue because of foul trouble. But you look at the prior three, as long as he stayed on foul trouble, he's been on the court pushing that, you know, 25 to 30-minute range. And anytime Potter can clear 24 minutes, he's a berserker. I mean, you even saw in 22 minutes against Northwestern, he put up 40. High-level GPP, probably the highest, you know, ceiling of anyone at his, you know, for a value X marker. Obviously, I don't think his ceiling's higher than Garza, but I think he has a potential to go, you know, 7.5x potentially, whereas Garza's, you know, going to be 5x kind of thing, is what I mean. So I'm a big fan of Potter today. Probably won't end up using him. I don't really, this has been a weird season. I haven't really been doing the whole multi-entry thing like I did last year. I probably should have, because that's what won me a big tournament last year. Been mostly doing 1-3 lineups, but I would definitely get Potter exposure here if you're running multiple. And I would also get Demetri Trice exposure. And this is one of the ones where his price is up, but you can throw that out the window and not worry about the price. He's consistently putting up, you know, 28 to 30. Wipe away that Purdue game. That was a slugfest. He didn't shoot well. You know, he had 30 against Iowa last time out. He's definitely going to score 30 today. I'm pretty confident in that. So you can use Trice as well. But it's mainly, you know, the value. And it's between Aleem Ford and John Davis now that Davison's kind of priced up and out of that range. And Nate Reuvers is not – I never even talk about him. He's 3-8. He's been that price point for a while. He's probably just going to get in foul trouble against Garza. They're just going to use his five fouls to attempt to slow Garza down. Don't expect much from him. I know our Wisconsin fan club would maybe say otherwise, but that's just the facts. John Davis and Aleem Ford, I would rank them as Davis and then Ford. And then if you want to go up to Potter, go get Potter. But that's pretty much where I'm at with the Badgers.
This could be a Trace game. I'm glad you said that. This could be a sneaky Trace game too. Another one's going to come in very low owned, getting not great projections. I could see 30 coming out of Trace too. I like that call.
For sure. All right. Next game here, Nebraska versus Northwestern. Should be some definite fantasy points coming out of here. Both teams have been fantasy thieves. They're giving up big-time totals. I thought Nebraska had turned a corner recently, and it seemed they had, but they ran into the, you know, the locomotive that was Iowa, and they got spanked. KenPom does have this game 71-65 in favor of Northwestern. 149th tempo ranking, Nebraska 29th, so there should be definitely extra possessions here for Northwestern. They're getting the boost. Northwestern started out so well. You know, what were they, 6-1, 7-1, then they went on a streak where they lost a ton of games. Now they've beaten a decent Minnesota team, a Maryland team that couldn't afford a loss. So they have some little momentum going on here. I don't believe they have played Nebraska yet. No, they haven't. So, you know, it'll be first time looking at them. There's good prices on both sides, though, especially starting with the Northwestern side. I am a big fan of Pete Nance, big fan of Ryan Young. I actually cored Pete Nance today. He projects pretty well across the industry. He's only 5'6". Nebraska's front court defense is certainly beatable. Nice thing about Nance is he can also step out and hit three. So I'm a big fan. His usage rate is only 20%. Shot rate's 23%. So those won't knock your socks off. But he does have a defensive rebounding rate of almost 25%, which is top 70 in the country. A block rate over 3%. He's shooting right around 33% from long range, which isn't super excellent. But for a 6'10 guy, that's adequate. You know, his 2-point field goals inside the arc, he's shooting almost 60%. He gets a lot of bunnies. He positions himself well around the rim. And I'm a really big fan of his. And I think that he's a very safe play. He's one that is going to be a good raw points play. Maybe he doesn't go for 40 today, but, you know, 25 to 28, I think he's locked in, especially at home here. There's only one senior on the roster, and that's Anthony Gaines. So I would expect him to probably start, I don't know, maybe over Miller Kopp potentially for the token senior day start. But, you know, I don't think that'll affect Nance at all. So I'm a big fan of his. I think Chase Audige, I'll get your take here because you've used him a couple times. I've been on the fence with him all night actually, because I've been up. Did get a few hours sleep there, but you know how we sleep in May. He's only 5'1", and Boo Booey has taken back over the alpha role. His price is ridiculous, 7K, I'm not paying it. But Audige could easily bounce back and become the alpha today and take over. He does have a higher usage rate than Boo at 27.3% compared to Boo's 24.9%, and his shot rate's 29.2% compared to Boo's 24.2%. Has a 3.1% steal rate. They both shoot around 35% from long range. Audige has taken 110. Boo Booey has taken 98. So, I'm trying to figure out if Audige is a main team play at 5-1. I think he is, especially in this Nebraska matchup. The last three games, he's been under 20 fantasy points, but he could very easily, you know, pop for a 40 fantasy point game at 5-1, and I think he would be almost – it would make you auto min cash, because I don't know that he's going to be that highly owned. I think people are going to overlook this spot for him. You also have Robbie Barron, 3-6, Miller Kopp, 4-3, Ryan Young, 4-5. You got a lot of good prices here for these guys. Gaines, 3-5, if you think he's going to, you know, do the senior day thing. Gaines, I'll tell you, 2 years ago, Gaines looked like a guy that was going to be the future of the program, and he did not pan out at all. I don't know what the deal is, but, you know, maybe he wants to swan song it one last time here, and if he doesn't come back, you know, have a big game against Nebraska. Nebraska side, my guy, Delano Banton's price is back up to a level where we probably don't need to roster him. He's still in play at 7-3, but, you know, 5-9 the other day was a nice spot to really target him. Kobe Webster at 4-5, you know, he's pretty decent because of his minutes. Lat Mayan 6-3, which is hysterical. I know Mayan's been crushing it, dude. He's a back-to-back 30 fantasy point games. I don't know. I don't think I buy that. And then Thor at 4-3, he's a cash play, playing 30 minutes a game. You know, he's hovering around 18 fantasy points a game over his last three. He's very much in play. So if you want a Nebraska guy, I think this game could have sneaky stack potential. I'm definitely on board with playing Thor here if you're looking for some value that people aren't really on or talking about. And then you got Trey McGowan's wedged in there at 6'3 as a rock solid GPP play. So what do you think about Chase and the rest of the guys here?
Yeah, Chase is in play. If you remember, I can't remember if it was Nebraska, but last year, the Sunday before the conference championships, Northwestern came in and had a huge, I think it was double overtime game. I probably have my biggest days of the year last year on this Sunday, and it was because of Northwestern. And I am 100% all over Pete Nance also. I think Pete Nance is a great player at 5'6", and they're not going to I don't think Nebraska is going to – he's the big man that's going to definitely threaten Nebraska today. He's averaging almost 7 rebounds a game, and they're not going to be able to keep him at bay if they go.
I think we lost Pete. Not sure if that's me or Pete. So, let's see here.
He played so little minutes. So, yeah, he's in play. And I'm being stupid, but I think Man, let everybody else playing, but Man, you can't. You can't avoid those numbers. I mean, he's averaging 30 DK points over his last two. But I'm not really touching Nebraska today. If anybody, it'd be Webster, but I'm over Pete Nance and Audage and probably Robbie Barron's only three six now.
Yeah.
You can't play these guys. Because, I mean, it could be trap written all over his game also, you know what I mean? But definitely Pete Nance and Chase Audage, both of them.
Yeah, and you can see where there's so much cheap value across the board. Now you guys are starting to see the picture that we're painting here of you can play whoever you want, because honestly, there's 15 to 16 different guys under 5K that you could argue for in your main lineup. So good mention, you know, Webster, even Thor are playable. So
yeah, Thor, like here, right, Pete? Thor may be the best play that comes out of this game on Nebraska side. I mean, he could actually be the best play. As long as he gets 30 minutes today, he's capable of putting up, you know, six times. But yeah. It's still, to me, it's all Audage and Nance. I'm not messing with Delano Banton. Now, this could be the game Delano Banton puts up a huge game, I guess. I still like his usage. Didn't even mention him, but you can't be messing with Nebraska. We're finally getting a chance to play Northwestern comfortably.
Yeah, definitely. Next game here, North Alabama versus Liberty. This is the ASUN final. Liberty gets the auto bid because North Alabama and their transition to D1 are not eligible to play in the March Madness. They can play in the CBI and some of these smaller ones. They can't play in this. So win or lose, Liberty's in. You would hope that Pride, you know, makes it to where they're still going to play like it's the back against the wall must win game. I would hate for them to, you know, not play it that way. There's a lot to like on the Liberty side. This is a really highly targetable Liberty team today. Ken Pom has it 75-61 in favor of Liberty. They're 350 in Temple ranking. They're getting a pace boost against North Alabama at 70. Darius McThree, McGee, we call him McThree affectionately, hasn't been on the slate since the fall. He did us really well back then. He's a very solid player for this team, the leader. 24.7% usage rate, a shot rate of 29.5%. Shooting 40% from long range on 193 attempts in 23 games. So he's chucking. A lot to like. Love the kid. 8K, I think it's a comfortable price to pay. You're going to get your 30 plus from him, possibly more. So if you're looking for a place to, you know, use your salary, this is definitely it. Kyle Rode at 5'1 and Elijah Cuffee at 4'9. Cuffee was a guy we were using for value back, you know, in fall also for Liberty and making us good money. Cuffee doesn't have super great rates across the board anywhere. And same with Rode. Rode has a 20.2% assist rate, but you look at the rest of his stuff, usage rate on both is under 20%. But they just do enough in their minutes to really, you know, make you feel comfortable. Cuffy's playing over 30 minutes. He's going to get you right around that 20 to 25 fantasy point mark. He's not going to score a huge amount, but he's, you know, an 8, 4, and 6 type of stat line that's going to get you value. And he has guard forward eligibility. And then same thing with Kyle Rode. You know, he's a guy that's going to play in that mid-30s. He's roughly going to get you, you know, he's had a two of his last three has been over 25 fantasy points, which has been huge for him. But he's another guy that's typically going to be right around like a 9.55 type of stat line, which is exactly what you need in value. So I think there's a lot of safety here on Liberty between McGee, Rode, and Cuffy. And I would even say that you probably need to play two of those three, if not all. I'm a big believer in stacking, and I think a Liberty stack could definitely win you some money today. And I've been poking around the industry to kind of see what people's opinions are. And most people will be playing two of the McGee, Rode, Cuffy grouping. So just keep that in mind as you're building your lineup. Only other real player I would look at maybe is Chris Parker at 4-6. He runs point a lot for this team. Ceiling's not there, but he can definitely get you 18 to 20 fantasy points. So definitely like him as well. On the North Alabama side, my favorite play is probably Peyton Youngblood. He doesn't have the – Mervin Jones has the highest usage rate for them, but Youngblood, he's just he's a really solid player. Price-wise, it's only 6'8", so he's very affordable. He's coming off a 41 fantasy point game against Gulf Coast, but two of his last three, he's been over 30 fantasy points. He's a big-time scorer, a walking bucket. So lately, he's stepped up, you know, in March here and doing some damage. Now, Mervin Jones – or James is 7'2". He's the guy that has the usage rate and the total season stats. He's got a 30% shot rate, a 29.2% usage rate, 23% defensive rebounding rate, and he's drawing 4.5 fouls per 40. So he's also definitely in play. You see three straight games, he's taking double-digit shots. He's got a double-double in two of his last three, 30 fantasy points or more in three straight. They're going to rely heavily on him and Youngblood to try to keep this game somewhat close. So I think those guys are both great GPP options. I could probably even be, you know, talked into using Youngblood in my main lineup. So I want pieces of this. I'm definitely going to have a mini stack here. You know, what's your gig here? Are you going to be stacking up Liberty as well? Sounds like the rest of the industry is.
Well, yeah, of course, you got to play McGee. He's a lock. And the rest of the industry also thinks so. Who I'm leaning towards.
It sucks because in the fall, we had McGee at low ownership all the time. And now everybody's caught up and like, well, we got to play this guy.
and he's going to be – if you look, he takes all the damn usage for that team too. I like this Mervin Jones for him. I like this Mervin Jones for North Alabama. And the thing is, this is North Alabama's – this is their season. This is their game. This is their championship. Remember, they're only the third year of the four-year transition period, so they can't go to the NCAAs. Yep. Now, they're a former Division II team. And this – anytime I see a dude putting up over 30% uses, man, and he's under 8K, he's only 7'2", he wakes me up. The only downfall with James is the last game against Liberty, he probably had, well, I see he's had one, probably had one of his worst games of the year, and they pretty much shut him down. He only played 22 minutes, and I don't even know why, he only had three fouls. But if the last three games show anything, he's been destroying the last three games. So, once again, there's so many names we like today, but I really like this Mervin James. Yeah. I could even see him possibly be in my main lineup because I think this game is so important to their program just, you know, to take that Atlantic Sun championship and to say they beat Liberty. So, what's Liberty? Liberty is 14 point. I have like 13 that point favorite. So it's going to be tough for them to even stay in this game. But I get to me, I would look at McGee, then Kyle Rode, then Cuffy. It's a $200. It's only $200 difference I'd rather take to me, Rode. But yeah, I guess you need two to come out of this game. I don't think I'd play three, but because it's not a real, you know, it's not a real high over under, but I guess you definitely need to. And McGee's got to be in your lap no matter what, especially because of ownership.
Yeah, I mean that, and that's the nice thing about Liberty is their usage is pretty contained within a group, you know, their starters or whatever. But yeah, maybe three is excessive, but at the same time, like I said, I think stacks are doing well right now. And if Liberty scores, Ken Pomazzo scoring 75, that's definitely good. The pace boost is nice. I just want them. I want to make sure that they don't have any motivation issues with the dub, you know, not being relevant. But you definitely want to go into the tournament with momentum. So James, yeah, Mervin James, yeah, Mervin James, Jamari Blackman, and Peyton Youngblood are the three, in my opinion, most playable North Bama guys. Youngblood's probably the only one I think I could use in cash, but I don't know. They didn't play Liberty very well. It was on Liberty's, I think it was on Liberty's floor. Yeah, it was on Liberty's floor. So I mean, they did get squashed. You know, on a neutral floor, maybe things will be different. But yeah, there's a lot to like here. All right, we have two games left. Texas Tech versus Baylor. Ken Palm has a 75-66 in favor of Baylor. They're 188th Temple ranking, Texas Tech 315. Not the Texas Tech team that we're used to seeing from the past few seasons. They're not a lockdown defensive group, but they still play a, you know, a slower pace. Matthew Mayer had made me some decent money the other night, man. I chanced it. You know, he was under 4K, and at home, for whatever reason, he just seems to be playing big minutes. Two of his last three, he's been over, you know, 25 fantasy points. He's only 4-4. He projects berserk again. And it's him or Arms from Winthrop that I'm really going back and forth on, as both have, you know, pretty similar rates in terms of usage and everything. You look at Mayer, he's right behind Butler. He has a 25.5% usage rate, a 26.3% shot rate, an 8.5% offensive rebounding rate, 30% combined. He's 4.5% steal rate. He's drawing 4.5 fouls per 40, 44% shooter from long range on 49 attempts. Like, when he's out there, he's looking to score, and he's become an added weapon for them, and he's really doing some serious damage to the point that, you know, he's got to be on the floor. Coach Drew has to put him out there, and you're seeing him start to get more, you know, Thamba starts, but he's not really a threat. Flagler and JTT had been getting those secondary minutes. Flagler is a good offensive guy. JTT more of a rebounder, but Maris forced his way onto the floor, and I think he's going to continue to see over 20 minutes. And if you give him 20 minutes at this price with his rates, even against a team like Texas Tech, he should do damage. So the more I talk about it, the more maybe I'm talking myself into running Mayer over Arms, but it'll definitely be a decision up until lock for me. I'm a big Mayer guy. Jared Butler's up to 9-2 now after his price tag was way too cheap before. As we mentioned, he's a, you know, high usage guy, 6th in Ken Palm Player of the Year rankings, 27% usage rate, 27% shot rate, almost 30% assist rate, top 25 steal rate at 4.3%, and he's a top 75 shooter from long range, 44% on 131 attempts. So Butler is a lethal 3-point shooter. Also really like Macy O'Teague. Teague, I kind of kicked myself on because he was only 6K last slate, and it was probably just a little too cheap to avoid, and I did. And he, of course, went off. So I think at 6'7", he's still very much in play. Davion Mitchell at 7'8", feels just a touch out of price or out of play for me. I'd rather play a guy like Teague. On the Texas Tech side, I'm probably not going to use anyone in cash. Santo Silva has looked good, closer to what he looked like when he was at VCU. So he's definitely in play at 6'2". Obviously he was better in the low fives, but he's still in play. He's looked like his old self, which is good to see. McCuller, our guy, 6'6", he's in play. I guess if I was going to use somebody on my main team, I still would look to Terrence Shannon, who's only 4'7". He hasn't been hitting the mark as much, which is why his price is staying low, but he still has, you know, second highest usage rate on the team behind McClung at 24%. Second highest shot rate on the team behind McClung at 25%. Has a 3% steal rate, draws 5.5 fouls per 40, which is highest on the team. He is a, you know, if he can get going, he's a stud on the offensive end, and he's a good on-ball defender. So you'd like to see him shake off whatever has kind of been causing him not to perform as well lately. You know, if he ever plays closer to that 30-minute mark like he was earlier in the season, he could definitely obliterate this 4-7 price. But I'm really just looking at Mayer, and if I have the salary and I want to go to you know, Jared Butler, I could. You know, he's a relatively safe option. You will never see him have a game as bad as he did against Kansas ever again, in my mind. So what are you doing with this one?
Yep, Butler's matchup proof, and I think this is the game you can get him where you can get him low-owned. Everybody's not going to be out over him like he was when he was, you know, mid-eights or in the sevens. I think I kind of like this price because we had the value today. Butler's my guy. I think this could be the day to get him low-owned. He's putting up 35 to 40 DK easy, and possibly even more. Myers in play. I think Texas Tech, though, is not going to be as easy maybe as Oklahoma State or even West Virginia, but yeah, he may find his way into a main lineup, especially at that price of 4-4. His usage is crazy. And MSS we're finally seeing, like you said, finally seeing the MSS from BCU, and he's all of a sudden become. I mean, he just looks so terrible at the beginning of the season, but he's put up a nice 25.4 every game for like the past 5-6 games. Where you become used to, you're going to get 4x out of him. I liked it better when he was 4.9 and 5.1. Of course, now he's jumped up $1,100. We're not going to get 5 or 6x out of him, but he's become the MSS that we all knew and loved. I still think he's a decent player, but to me, it's Butler, and Butler I think could be a top player of the day, and Meyer.
Meyer's going crazy. My headset has crashed out on me, so my sound may sound a little weird. We're at the end here anyway, so bear with me. You can still hear me okay, I hope, Pete.
Yeah, I got you.
Last game here, Michigan versus Michigan State. KenPom has it 74-64 in favor of Michigan. They're 236 tempo ranking, Michigan State 173. This is the rematch game here. They just played. Michigan won 69-50 pretty comfortably on their own floor. Now they got to go to Michigan State. Price-wise, everybody's pretty roughly where they should be. I mean, Wagner at 8-1. He's always in play, though. I'm not going to write him off. He had another 30 last game. Livers at 7-7 is a little high for me. Dickinson at 7K is certainly in play. Eli Brooks has slipped under 5K to 4-7. He's in play simply because of his minutes. Mike Smith at 4-6. You know, he's going to play big minutes. So the starting five for Michigan is definitely in play, except for, I think, Livers, who's just a little high. If you want to go that route, Michigan State, you know, obviously they're struggling, and they're definitely beatable in a myriad of ways. Aaron Henry's 8-6. That's just too high for me against Michigan. Gabe Brown, 4-8. I know you talked on him. Langford, 6-2. Like, those are the three most playable guys right now. And even at home against a team like Michigan, I'm not seeing the upside pretty much for anyone here. So this might be one of the few times where, you know, I'm not going to have exposure to the hammer game. If I were, I think Mike Smith, Eli Brooks, or Franz Wagner, you know, any of those guys, I would be, you know, hard pressed to say, no, don't run them in your lineup. But it's kind of short and sweet for me here. It's not a game that I really care about. How are you feeling?
Nope. And I want a piece of this too. It's the hammer game, and it's the 4:30 game. But there's nothing really to like. If anything, it's Franz Wagner, but he's now at 8-1. There's way too many other plays here. I'm not messing with Mike Smith again, not in a main lineup. And probably Brooks would be the play out, but everybody's either properly priced or I don't like them. So my day is going to stop at that Baylor game at 4 o'clock, and hopefully no one comes out of this game high owned and crushes, which I don't think so. So no, I don't see anything come out of this game.
Yeah, should be relatively nice. All right, so let's see. We're going to talk price picks here in a minute. We do have a question in the general room. Pick one for cash between Wagner, Giroux, or Springer. I would go Springer, personally.
Who is it? Wagner, Giroux, or Springer?
Yes.
Yeah, Springer.
Okay. All right, so prize picks here. Let me just refresh it. My featured prize picks plays here. Jaden Gardner from ECU. I was hoping this ECU-Cincinnati game would be on the slate because Cincinnati's just bleeding fantasy points to their opponents. Gardner over 30.4 fantasy points, and then Jaden Springer over 27.1 fantasy points. Those were at the time of release. I think they're still the same. That's good. Those are the two I'm highest on. What are you seeing here on price picks that you like?
Boy, they love playing Mac McClung, don't they? Like, he's on their heavy sleep.
Yeah.
Oh man, there's not Springer. Yeah, Springer and Trice at 26. Did you say Trice?
No, I'm on. I don't mind Trice, but I have Gardner and Springer because Cincinnati is just they're giving up huge amounts of fantasy points.
Oh, I see Gardner there now. Yeah, okay, I can see. Yeah, definitely Gardner 30 point. I am at 30.4 and fantasy, yeah. And then 20.5 regular. Yeah, Gardner's a good spot. Cincinnati's giving up a lot of points, right? Yeah, I'm on both same as you.
The other one, I kind of, like I said, I think Macy Oteague, he gets ignored by the industry a lot. His fantasy score, 22.7, if you're looking to do like a flex 3-4 option, 22.7 is, you know, on the low end for him. He's been hitting 30 a lot, or you can go to 14.5 actual points. I would probably just lean fantasy score there for 8 more, though. Gives you a little bit more protection. At 22.7, I think he hits that you know, him or Butler. Butler at 30.4. If you're looking for a bigger, you know, string together bet, I think both of those guys could do well.
I have Butler's on a big game today, so
yeah, that's pretty much it. Broke it down for you guys. I will have an article for the second slate here for Sunday, the three gamer. So look for that here a little bit later this afternoon. We'll be back. What's today? So we'll be back tomorrow. We'll have our Monday night stream on YouTube for you guys. We did your first YouTube yesterday and went very well. Appreciate the support. Make sure you guys get over to YouTube and your fielder's choice and sub to us. Turn on the notifications so that you don't miss when we do our next stream. Also running the March Madness, you know, promo 50% off, so it's only $25, gets you access to everything.